This is Ashley Bond, Miss Illinois USA 2009 and a member of the Chicago Lovables. And you're listening to Fred and Mark on the Chicago Bullseye.
What's going on? This is Joakim Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago
Bullseye. Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of the Chicago Bullseye. I am your host, Mark Lumenthal. This week, we are going to do things a little bit differently. Our whole show is based upon a great interview that happened yesterday, on March 2nd, with Waddle and Sylvie and with Nick Friedel. I feel like the interview gave a lot of insight into the situation currently with Tom Thibodeau, as well as the mindset of the team. It was just a really good interview, so we're actually going to have the interview in its entirety start off the show, because that's what Fred and I are talking about during the show. And also, Fred called in afterwards on Waddle and Sylvie. This is a couple hours later, but we're going to play his excerpt too, so that you kind of get his take on what's going on in the Thibodeau situation, and then we're going to break it down during the show. So enjoy the show, and go Bulls!
More injury news for the Bulls. Jimmy Butler hyperextended the elbow yesterday. 3 to 4 weeks is now the timeline, but no surgery. So, Nick, does this actually constitute as good news?
Yeah, actually, given the circumstances, Sylvia. I mean, I know Adrian initially said 3 to 4. The Bulls are saying 3 to 6. So the hope, at least from Jimmy's perspective and from his camp, is that if he comes back before the regular season and Derek comes back before the regular season ends, they can at least get a few games together under their belt going into the playoffs. But with Jimmy and with Derek, you just don't know. And Jimmy came into the Advocate Center. He seemed to be in good spirits. And the people that saw him walk through initially said that he had one of those my man Ike from WGN, one of the camera guys, said it was like a bionic man sleeve on his arm. So you just don't know what he's going to be able to do aside from rest. And I know I was listening to Mr. Goffman on the way back from practice. Is it a blessing in disguise? Well, it could be. But the issue for these guys is always, how do you build a rhythm if you're not playing with one another on the floor? And that's been a problem all year for the Bulls. Hell, it's been a problem for 3 or 4 years at this point. But you lose Taj and Derek and Jimmy, that's three of your top five players, and it's tough for any team to overcome that.
Nick, I don't know that there is a easily understandable answer to the following question, but how do you kind of quantify what has occurred the last couple of years with Derek, with Joe, now with Jimmy, with Taj's ankles? This is a team that consistently has not been able to stay healthy. Is there any easy answer for that, in your opinion?
I don't think there is, Tommy. And as far as, let's take the short term. The Jimmy and Taj injuries were basketball plays. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was straight up bad luck. Now, I know that the Tibbs minute debate will rage on in this city for a long, long time, way after Tom leaves, whenever that is. But you know, why are these teams, fading down the stretch? We've seen it. And there are two schools of thought. The first being that Tom wears his guys out. It's not just the minutes in games. It's the time in practice. It's the shoot-arounds that aren't really shoot-arounds, that are actual practices the day of the games. You play devil's advocate to that, and you say, well, in the last few years, to what you were saying, Tommy, have the Bulls been undermanned? Well, yeah, and guys like Joakim Noah and Jimmy Butler, and before he got dealt to Cleveland last year, Luol Deng, they had to pick up more slack, and they had to play more minutes because guys like Derrick Rose were out for the year. So it's all in how you want to – it's all in kind of what side do you want to believe. Do you want to believe that Tibbs rode his guys into the ground, or do you want to believe that Tibbs did what he had to do with an undermanned roster and played – the players he trusted the most and left them out on the floor more.
What's consensus of all the basketball, you know, brilliance, the great minds in the game out there? What is everyone saying? Because I'm not inferring anything. I said to Sylvia, I asked him the question at the break. I said, look, I'm usually the one screaming, get him out of the game, get him out of the game. And I don't know that for the reasons you just mentioned, Nick, I don't think I'm sitting here saying, well, this all has everything to do with Tom Thibodeau. But what's the consensus with the basketball geniuses out there?
You talk to enough people around the league, Tommy, and the question is always, why is Tibbs running his guys as hard as he does? And then the follow-up is, well, that's true, but and he practices guys harder than a lot of people, and he uses his guys more minutes than a lot of other coaches in the league. But I understand from Tom's perspective where that's coming from. I mean, the rosters the last couple of years were not as deep as this one was and has been. So we'll see. But I think, as far as a general consensus, I think the consensus is Tom coaches his players harder than most coaches in the league. And as we've talked about for 5 years, when you get Tibbs, that's what you're getting. I mean, that is what you're getting. That's what you're paying him to do. You're paying him to win games. And we will fight forever and ever. Well, is he winning games or is he running out of gas with this team towards the end too many times? It depends on the perspective. But the general notion throughout the league is this one. Tom Thibodeau is a great coach. Tom Thibodeau's players, for whatever reason, and we've illustrated a few of them here, continue to run out of gas down the stretch in years. And it's an issue that Tibbs is likely going to have as one of his lasting legacies in Chicago, whether that's fair or not.
So do you believe that Jeff Van Gundy paints you a picture of what Tom Thibodeau thinks too? Or do you think that, and I don't know if Van Gundy speaks for Tibbs, but is he a barometer for how bad it is?
It's real bad, Sylvie. It's as bad as it's ever been. But as far as specifically with Jeff goes, I mean, hell, I've talked to Jeff about this several times. If you're Jeff Van Gundy and you have the role that you have on a national broadcast to speak your mind and offer opinions, that's one thing. But Jeff is a really, really smart guy, and he's been around the league a really, really long time. I don't know who out there buys that Jeff, as one of Tom's closest friends and confidants for 30-plus years, doesn't believe that Jeff is in some way speaking for Tom. And both Jeff and Tom have been defiant in that they don't speak for one another. But, guys, we're in professional sports. This is professional sports. Perception is reality. The perception is that what Jeff says, because of his close relationship to Tom, has to be coming from what Tom thinks in some regard. And you know, that the whole issue, Jeff's whole thing, and he's talked about it on the air, this goes back to Dallas, is the feeling that while the Bulls front office supports Tibbs publicly, behind the scenes, there's some other things going on. And we've talked about it for several years. I think one of the hardest things as far as the relationship between Garham Pax and Tibbs goes is that there's a push behind the scenes it's control in a lot of ways, but I think it's ego as well. I think a lot of people, not just the front office, but a lot of people in the organization believe that the players should get more credit, believe that Garham Pax should get more credit. And if you're Tom, I mean, Tom's job is to coach the team and to produce wins.
But, so, Nick, there's no greater support that a front office can show its employee. And let's not mistake here. The head coach is an employee, regardless of sport. He's an employee. He's not a boss. The greatest support they can show him is cash and a contract and filling his roster with more talented people each and every year. I would think using those two issues as measuring sticks that the front office has supported Tom Thibodeau.
In that regard, Tommy, they have.
But those are the two most important regards.
Well, here's the counterpoint to what you're saying. If you're Tibbs for 4 years, everybody has allowed you to do your thing because you are widely regarded as one of the best coaches in basketball. And before this year, and guys, we want to look at as to where this all began. I cannot stress this enough. It was game 82 in Charlotte when Tibbs decided that he wanted to play all his guys regular minutes. Jimmy Butler played 48 minutes in a game that really didn't matter in the end. Joakim Noah played 43 or 44 minutes, and a lot of people feel that's when the knee problem started going into the playoffs. Gar and Pax came to Tibbs in the summer and said flatly, you are not to play Derrick Rose or Joakim Noah more than 30 or 32 minutes a game to start the year. And that's when this thing all, it started to go off track, even more so than it had in years past. And Tom has been very vocal in the first couple months of the season saying, I don't agree with this, in as many words. And for the first time, they came down, and Tommy, to your point, Tibbs has a boss, and Tibbs has several bosses, but Tibbs wanted to just be left alone. Tibbs wanted to do his thing the way he had done it for 4 years, and that's what changed initially. And then they started losing, and as we've talked about for a long time at this point, I felt, especially in the last couple of months, it's not just a Gar and Pax versus Tom issue. There was an undercurrent of a Tibbs versus some of the players issue, just with some of the frustration. Those guys look around the league, and they see other teams playing lesser minutes, and they see teams taking more days off, and they're saying, hey, why doesn't that happen to us? And then they started to lose in January, and that's when this thing started to shift a little bit. Did I ever think that Tibbs completely lost this team, as some people thought? No, but the frustration was there more so than it had ever been from the players' perspective. Now, we have all these storylines in place. Behind the scenes, the tension was always there between Tibbs and Gar and Pax, but they tried to get through it. Now, when you're looking for what exploded this whole thing, it was Van Gundy's comments in Dallas, flatly. When we're going through the timeline of how this has gotten to this point, Jeff, whether he was speaking for Tom or not, really did a hell of a lot more damage than I think even he could have expected. And maybe, I'm not sure what his intentions were, frankly, because he's paid to offer an opinion on telecast. But I'm telling you, having talked to all parties involved, that's what set this whole thing ablaze.
Yeah, he's biased, too. At the very least, if he's not speaking for Tibbs, he's got an important role in NBA broadcast for our network.
Absolutely.
And you can't, whether you're Joe Buck or you're Chris Collinsworth or you're Troy Aikman, you can't go into a game with a bias against the front office and give that perception on the air. Van Gundy makes it obvious. Van Gundy has a bias dislike for the Bulls front office. It is personal to him now. Whether that's coming for Tibbs or just from Jeff Van Gundy, it's personal.
You're right, and that's the difference. Hey, look, I mean, if we're all being honest, was there truth to some of what Jeff was talking about in Dallas? Yeah, I think behind the scenes for years, the Bulls have had issues with their relationships with coaches. There was truth to that. Absolutely there was. I mean, to run from that would not be telling the truth. So Jeff says what he says in Dallas, and he and Gar get into it, which became public in that Ed Sherman story from last week. And that didn't have to be out there. See, that's where I think, from my perspective, I think that's where Jeff pushed it too far. He made that story with he and Gar public, and then yesterday during the telecast, I mean, that was a personal shot at Pax. And, whether you agree or disagree about what has gone down, and again, was there truth to what Jeff said initially in Dallas? Yeah, there was some truth. But to take it to that level, that made it way more personal than it had been before. And as far as the relationship between Tibbs and Garum Pax goes, it's what has just made it disintegrate. I mean, that his words in the on the platform that he has really made everything much, much worse. And now compounding all of this, guys, is the fact that this Bulls team is in tatters, injury-wise. But if you're asking me, do I think there's any way this marriage sustains itself?
No.
Hell no. I mean, I don't know.
So silly.
Know anybody within the organization as we sit here today. I don't know really anyone who believes that this marriage will last into the future.
All right, so percentage-wise, you put a blank percent chance of Tibbs either being fired or traded this offseason.
Right now, today, I'd say it's about 90-95.
Wow.
The only thing
that could save it, guys.
Is a championship.
Is if they go to the finals.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. That is the only, and it's sad. I can't stress this enough. On a personal level, having covered all these guys for 5 years, I genuinely like Tibbs,
yep,
and I genuinely like Garum Pax. And to see this go down the way that it has, in the way that it has behind the scenes, it's just sad. Because you wonder if they could just sit there and talk to each other,
yep,
and say, okay, this is what I feel and this is what you guys feel. But we're past that point. It's over now.
I think the three of us feel the same exact way, and it's sad. It really is, because I agree with you, Nick. I like Tom Thibodeau. I have appreciation for his coaching ability. I think the Bulls front office have done a nice job. I think together they have done a pretty good job of doing what each other needs to be done for this team to be pointed in the right direction. Unfortunately, injuries have gotten the best of them. But on that front, I wasn't here on Friday, but I'm sure you guys talked about it. But the vibe around there still really positive about Derek, the procedure he went through, and the prognosis for him to get back before the postseason gets here, Nick?
I mean, I'd argue with you right now that the feeling around Derek is more positive than the feeling around Jimmy. And that's not to say that Jimmy may not come back in 3 weeks, as the Bulls say, especially if he's feeling better. It's just that we've seen Derek the last couple days walking around, and he seems like he's in great spirits. He seems like he's walking around fine. The biggest hurdle for Derek, as always in this whole process with the knees, is the mental aspect of it. With Jimmy, so you touched on it earlier, it's not just the elbow. I mean, he's been dealing with the shoulder and a messed up thumb all season long.
Right.
This is the third pretty serious injury he's tried to fight through. So do I expect both of those guys to come back this year? Yes. Do I expect them both to come back before the playoffs begin? Yes. But to think that they're going to get Jimmy, Derek, and now Taj Gibson, who that ankle injury is real bad, guys. And Tom Thibodeau talked about it today. He keeps saying he's day-to-day. I don't get that sense. I think Taj could be out for at least another week or two. So to get all three of those guys back and to try and build some chemistry before the postseason is a real, real tough ask for a team that wants to win a title. And tying it all back together, I think this is the frustrating part for me as I'm watching this all unfold, guys. Let's say Tibbs leaves. However it goes down, Tibbs leaves at the end of the year. Now you're starting fresh with a core that was built to win right now. And I don't care who the coach is. We joke around, is it Fred Hoiberg? Is it somebody else? Who knows? Who knows who the coach would be in this scenario? But to start fresh with a group that was built to win right now after giving 5 years in this system is really, really tough, and it lends more credence to the idea that if the Bulls don't get it done this year, that title window with this group may in fact be closed.
Wow. Really quick then, on the personnel front, we talked to Pax on Friday. He told us at that point they were not going to sign another guard. Obviously, things change with Jimmy going down and Kirk being Kirk. will they sign someone immediately, Nick?
I think the phone calls are being made right now, Sylvie. Do I think it's Nate? It could be. I know Pax talked to us about it the other day. I would expect them to sign somebody, though. the issue for the Bulls and the issue for Tibbs is this. He has invested so much into Brooks, Heinrich, and to a much, much lesser extent, Etuan Moore, that whomever the guy may be that they bring in, I don't think the guy's going to have that much of a difference maker. And that's a reality for where they're at in the season. So I know a lot of fans want the Bulls to add somebody, but whoever that guy is, I don't think it makes that big of a difference. They are who they are at this point. Kirk Heinrich is hurting more than he's helping right now because he is not a threat offensively. So it's going to be Aaron Brooks who's got to carry a lot of the weight. And one more guy who has gotten more confidence recently is Tony Snell. All of a sudden, Tony Snell, who couldn't get on the floor earlier in the year, now becomes one of the biggest pieces to this puzzle for the Bulls in the short term. And I can't tell you how much the whole thing reminds me of how Jimmy Butler came to prominence a couple years ago.
Yep.
Dane got hurt. They needed somebody to step in. Here comes Jimmy Butler, and he proved to Tibbs that he could do it.
Well, maybe Tibbs should go down the bench and look a little more. When a guy goes 25 minutes, 0.0 rebounds, give Etuan Moore 5 minutes. Give him a shot. It can't
Couldn't
be worse.
Agree more.
So,
Couldn't
all right, Nick, more. We got to run. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, see you guys.
Fascinating stuff. Nick puts it at 90 to 95% as it stands today. The Tibbs will not be back with the Bulls this offseason. Trent and Bartlett, you're on ESPN 1000. Hi, Trent.
Yeah, it's Fred. How you doing, guys?
Oh, what's up, Fred? That's a Goffman special right there, yeah.
That's all right, but anyhow. Hey, I just want to side with management on this one. I mean, obviously, the minutes is an issue, and everybody says, well, Tibbs is 17-22 in the playoffs because of injuries. I just want to scream, he's partly responsible for those injuries. In 2013, Noah goes into the playoffs with plantar fasciitis, and he was averaging almost 40 minutes per game for the first 2 months of that season. Paul Gasol has been in the top 20 minutes per game for most of this year as a 34-year-old center. That shouldn't happen. Centers don't play minutes like that in the NBA in general, especially if you're 34 years old. So he overplays some guys, and he underplays other guys. I'd like to point to Kyle Korver, who on this team averaged 20 minutes per game in his first year here as a 29-year-old and about 22 minutes per game in the following season. So there's some guys that he underplays. And he overplays guys like Kirk Heinrich, who obviously has shown shooting around 25% since January 1st, that he no longer belongs in the NBA, especially at the two-guard position. And yet, Snell buried on the bench all of January, and Heinrich averaging 25 minutes per game. If I'm Pabst and I'm Carr, I've had it too. It's ridiculous. And for this issue, minutes isn't a big issue, and I mean, that's all I got to say. I don't know what to say anymore about it.
He brought up some good points.
Yeah, I mean, you know me. I'm the minutes guy. I haven't been as dialed into the minutes this year. I really haven't, have I? I mean, I haven't.
I was surprised by your reaction when I texted you in the Milwaukee game. When Derek and Noah came back with 5 minutes left, up 21.
Yeah.
I was shocked that you didn't care as much because that's exactly this is why you rant.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to rant when that happens, I mean, that's the whole, and it's the same team that it happened
right.
against when
no,
we originally
I mean,
started.
Yeah, it's minutes and context. The only reason why I thought maybe Derek was given a little bit more play is coming out of the All-Star break. Boy, he had no flow, none. But you're right. And as you zoom out, there's no reason for him to be in the game. You let him get that flow back over the course of time, not in that one particular game.
Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of the Chicago Bullseye. I am your host, Mark Lewenthal, and with me, as always, is the man, Simply El Fuego, Frederick Pfeiffer. Freddie, talk to me.
Mark, how you doing, brother? So much controversy, so much going on in the world of the beloved Bull with Nick Friedell's comments yesterday. And a lot of talk on Twitter. I've been going back and forth with Kelly from Bleacher Report. A lot of good conversations, pro and con, who's for management, who's for Tibbs. You know, in the grand scheme of things, I think we should all step back and say we still got a season to finish here. I don't think it would be smart in any way you look at it for Tibbs to go if the Bulls get to the finals or especially if they win it all. I mean, it'd be ridiculous. So let's hope that this becomes all mute. With a Bulls victory and a championship this year. Well, a lot of time left. We'll wait and see. What say you?
Well, I mean, look, that interview yesterday with Nick Friedell I thought was very eye-opening. What's funny is that these topics aren't catching a ton of attention. And it's like, I mean, especially in the Chicago media, I think nationally, I mean, a little bit. I mean, you know, you obviously, if you listened to the game the other day on ESPN, I was at the game, so I didn't listen to the broadcast. But afterwards, I did go on Yahoo, and I looked at the what Jeff Van Gundy had said, and he's certainly stirring quite a bit of controversy here. There's a lot of interesting things in that Nick Friedell interview, and even though there's a lot to talk about, I think, on this show, since the last time we talked. Last time we talked, Derek had just gone down, so, you know, our views on what is actually going to happen, I kind of actually want to save for a different day because I found this interview to be so polarizing. I mean, I think personally, I'm going to agree with Nick Friedell here that I think that there's a 90 to 95% chance the Tibbs will be gone at the end of this season. I almost don't care if we make the finals or not. I mean, look, if we make the finals, fine, but I don't think we're going to make the finals. I mean, right now, you're talking about our two best players being out and three of our top five guys being out, and they're probably not going to be coming back until very close to the playoffs. I think it's very unrealistic to think that they're going to be able to find a rhythm when you have all these other teams, the teams you're going to be going up against, who've been better than them for most of the year anyway, are going to be, you know, having found their rhythm and be ready to go. I think today, listening to Jimmy talk about his shoulder, what was very interesting to me was one of the things that he said was that this could be a good thing. This could be a good thing because I could certainly use the rest. That really hit home for me because Jimmy Butler's a warrior. I mean, this is a dude that did not have a family in his teenage years. You know, this is a guy that slept on couches. This is a guy that was playing, you know, night in and night out for us and doing whatever he was asked. And him saying that he was tired today, I don't think is something, like, could you ever have imagined Jimmy Butler saying, hey, man, you know, I need a break. You know, I mean, this me being injured for 3 weeks and not coming back until the end of the year could actually be a good thing. I don't take that. I take that personally as an indirect comment towards Tom Thibodeau. I mean,
I don't think he meant it as such, but I do agree with that assertion. I've heard a couple people say it could be a blessing in disguise. If you can keep Jimmy fresh and Rose fresh and not playing 40 minutes a night for the next 4 weeks, I think that's a good thing because we both know they were both healthy. Butler would be averaging somewhere between 40 and 48 minutes a game as we wind down the season, as he did last year. He played the last game of the season playing 48 minutes. I think that's his point, and I think that's absolutely true. In a way, this protects them from Tibbs for the next 4 weeks.
That's not good.
Well, I know. That's regardless of the fact. I mean, this whole argument that we've been having on Twitter and you know, for and against Tibbs, I've never denied the guy's a great coach. He's a fantastic defensive mind. He's one of the best in the league. I think he's done a great job when it comes to coaching. This issue, there's two issues around minutes. Number one, how many minutes he's playing a guy like Butler, how many minutes he's playing Gasol. For Gasol to be top 20 in the league and MPG's at 34 and a center is completely asinine, and it's ridiculous. And it's not conducive to Gasol entering the playoffs playing at an optimal level. So that's one issue of minutes. The other issue is completely separate. I don't think there should be any argument on this. When you have starters on the floor with a 20 or more point lead with 2 minutes left, that is one of the dumbest things you could possibly do. That's playing Russian roulette. That's somehow saying that whatever ridiculous idea you have of value by playing out on the court with 2 minutes left against a team like Milwaukee, like he had Rose out there the other night, somehow they're learning something that's more important or outweighs the risk of injury is just completely asinine. It's just ridiculous, and I don't know how anybody can make that argument out there. Even the most biggest Tibbs supporter, tell me what you're learning in the last 2 minutes against the third string Milwaukee Bucks that's so damn important that outweighs the injury of risk. It's mind blowing. So that aside, and you're going to hear the Nick Friedell interview. I'm sure you're going to play it. Nick brought up the point that the last game of the season last year, Noah played 40 plus minutes. Butler played 48 minutes, and they went into the playoffs, you know, with Noah looking like the Tin Man, and, you know, not running around, obviously not at 100%. Butler, you know, played, I thought, pretty well, but not, you know, didn't look fresh. Team looked tired again and injured again, and management had it, and they imposed minutes limits, and that's the whole gist of the argument, that they're meddling with Tibbs and his coaching style. And if that's what the issue is, and I think that is by most accounts, then I completely side on management. They're 100% right. For Jimmy Butler to play 48 minutes in that last regular season game, for Joakim Noah to play over 40 minutes on a bum knee, Tibb admitted it after the last game of the Wizards series. He said, quote unquote, well, his knee has been bothering him for quite a while now, you know, going back to the, you know, to the middle of the season or something like to that effect. Then why the hell did you play him 40 minutes in a meaningless end of the season game? You know, it's inexcusable. And then anybody can make all these points around it's not a big deal. It is a freaking big deal. And management's 100% right on this issue.
And there's a couple things I want to touch on. First of all, Fred, you talk about protecting Jimmy Butler from Tibbs and Derrick Rose from Tibbs. That's bad. That's not a good thing. That's like having a father who like abuses his children and the child goes away to summer camp and you're like, well, hey, it's actually a blessing in disguise because the kid's not going to get beaten. I that's not a good thing.
It's not anything like that. I agree it's not a good thing.
Obviously, but I'm just saying it obviously doesn't have that sort of extremity to it. What I'm saying is that it's up to Thibodeau to make sure that these guys are ready to go for the playoffs, and they're not ready to go for the playoffs, and that could be seen by their dismal playoff percentage under Tom Thibodeau. I mean, Jeff Van Gundy wants to point towards the fact that Tom Thibodeau has a 65% win-loss record with two seasons without Derrick Rose. Well, I'll also look at the fact that if you take away the first playoff series that he had, where during that particular playoff series, management was able to get through to Tibbs, from what I understand, until after his first season. Once he won Coach of the Year, it was the Tom Thibodeau show, and all bets were off. Plus, the East was freaking terrible. So let's just keep that clear.
East
was horrible.
Good point.
So we cruised to get to Miami, but we didn't play anybody. So fine. 3 years after that, we should have won. The only good series that we had was that Nets series, where you could say that we could have lost it or should have maybe have lost that series. That first-round series against Philadelphia back in 11-12 when Derrick Rose went down, we still should have beat the Philadelphia 76ers. They're still the A seed, and we were still the 1 seed with or without Derrick Rose. Tom Thibodeau's winning percentage in the playoffs, if you look at just the last 2 years, is 30%. His win percentage, if you look at the last 3 years, is 32%. So if we want to take a look here and gloat about how great Tom Thibodeau has been with this team, a 65% winning percentage over the course of his career, well, then I'm also going to take a look here at the fact that he's only a 30% winning percentage here in the playoffs. Every single year, our players fade down the stretch, time and time again. Management has every right to give their input to the coach. No coach is completely, you know, I mean, Tom Waddle said it best, man. Tom Thibodeau is an employee. As much as he doesn't want to be, as much as he wants to be the general manager and owner of this team, he is an employee. And that we can look at every sort of, we can look at, you know, Pax's relationship with Vinny Del Negro. We can look at his relationship with, I don't think he was Bill Cartwright, but Scott Skiles, whatever it is. We could start saying, well, Bulls management is continuously having issues. That's just ridiculous because you're pointing towards a million different things. Jeff Van Gundy brought up the point, if you actually listen to his comments, Jeff Van Gundy brought up, you know, our relationship with Doug Collins, our relationship with Phil Jackson. Well, look, did Phil end on a sour note? Sure, that was ridiculous. Doug Collins, the guy had hit a wall. So
that had nothing to do with the current administration.
You're absolutely right.
It's ridiculous to say that. I mean, basically,
right.
He's had three coaches since he took over, you know, over 10 years ago. Can you point to every organization in the NBA? His comments were so pathetic the other night. And not only that, you know, people are like, well, Fred, why are you defending management? Those comments are not beneficial to this organization. They're not beneficial for us getting free agents in. They're not beneficial for us getting coaches in. That gets around the league, nonsense like that, and it's not true.
And Scott Skiles, he does it again and again, Fred. He did it. Gar Forman approached Jeff Van Gundy about this. And then Jeff Van Gundy goes public with it.
Well, Scott,
and then last game, he's making rips on he goes, you would have thought that I would have just traded Tyrus Thomas for LaMarcus.
Oh, I know. And that's like, what a way to focus on the only bad move, basically, these guys have done, you know, in the last 10 years. Talk about when they drafted Noah. Talk about when they drafted Butler at the end of the first round. Talk about when they drafted Taj Gibson. You can go up and down this lineup. This team is extremely deep and extremely talented. I think Tibbs would admit that. Do you think Tibbs, the Bulls have been 11-19 2 years ago against the West and 13-17 against the West last year. You think that, I don't know, I'm just throwing this out there, you think that maybe that has something to do with our stellar regular season record? I don't know. Maybe it does. I think it does. Do you think we'd have the same record if we were in the West? It's such a difficult thing that's going on right now because, you know, I find myself arguing against Tibbs. I know he's a great coach. I'm not denying that. I'm not arguing that. But he's got a problem. And this issue has to be solved, and management's trying to solve it. And for people to say, there's no proof that he went to Jeff Van Gundy and complained to Van Gundy. Are you nuts? Really, you don't believe that he didn't go to Van Gundy and explain to him how they're meddling with his coaching, they're meddling with the minutes, imposing minutes limitations on him? That's exactly what he did. And Van Gundy goes national with it. I mean, it's insane, Mark, where we're at right now. So you're basically condemning the Bulls organization and management and ownership, and it makes it less likely for us to get players in the future, makes us less likely to look like an organization where people want to go. It's stupid. It makes me sick. I've had it. That's why, you know what? We have another – this team, to me – without a doubt, is more talented than Atlanta up and down this roster. It's more talented than Washington. The only team that you can maybe argue that we're not better than is Cleveland, in my opinion. That's the only team that I could potentially say, well, they got LeBron, they're better than us. If we don't get to the Eastern Conference Finals, if we do not get there, I will maybe make an excuse if we play Cleveland in round two. But in my opinion, it should be Eastern Conference Finals or bust. If we have another flameout, if we have another failure, it's not going to get any better than this, talent-wise. We've had a guy made the All-Star team in Paul Gasol who agreed to play for $7.1 million. Where are you going to find that again? Do you really think that's going to happen again? This team is a guy like Mirotić who showed time and time again this season he should be playing more, extremely talented, but Tibbs doesn't believe in playing rookies. You got a guy like Jimmy Butler playing at an All-Star level with a low contract dollar amount relative to his play this season. It's not going to happen again. So you better get your head out of your end and say, you know what, it's this year or bust.
There's no question that it's this year or bust, Fred. There's absolutely no question about it. There's so much here that bothers me. I mean, it is so childish, and it's so – it kind of disgusts me. It leaves a bad taste in my mouth because I really did feel like Tom Thibodeau could be a franchise coach. He could have been like a Greg Popovich, a guy that's with the organization forever. And the problem is that he does things his way, only his way. And, I mean, you look, and it's like, you're absolutely right. It's conference finals or bust. We have more talent than all these teams right now that are above us in our division. And why is the reason that our record is what it is right now? Now, it's not a bad record. We have a 61% winning percentage, but we could be better. Why? Because we're constantly getting injured. Constantly. It's not a coincidence, Fred. It's a coincidence maybe this year. I mean, Jimmy Butler had a freak accident that happened during a game, but he was playing already with a bad thumb. Taj Gibson, freak sort of thing, though he's had issues with his ankle before. But let's just be honest. I mean, you see a reoccurrence of nagging injuries with a lot of these players. You see Pau Gasol playing a ridiculous amount of minutes for a player of his age. And then you can go back and forth every single year. I mean, I just pointed out the win percentage in the playoffs every single year before this. Well, why? Every single year, someone major is not playing or is injured and not at 100% down the stretch. Continuously, year in and year out, since Tom Thibodeau has been here, other than his first year in the league, other than that, he has continuously faltered down the stretch every single time. And I thought, Fred, you brought up a great point in when you called into ESPN 1000 that not only is it that he's got this ability to play people way too many minutes, but he also plays people too few minutes. And you go back when you brought up a great point about Kyle Korver. It's not just the fact that Kyle Korver could have been playing more minutes. You look at the fact that, A, we didn't have a two-guard that year. We had Keith Bogans as our starting two-guard. Kyle Korver should have been playing anyway. Kyle Korver's an all-star this year. Kyle Korver's been starting on Atlanta, and they've been playing great ball ever since he's been there. That same player was on this team. It's not like he just blossomed in Atlanta. He never got a chance to play. And look at this year.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler's playing 40 minutes a freaking game. Doug McDermott cannot see the floor for the life of him. Tony Snell, it's like he's still fighting for a position when Kirk Heinrich is going like 0-for-8 against the Clippers. Kirk Heinrich this year, everyone sees it. Everybody sees it. You listen to ESPN. You read the newspaper. Every year, Fred, I will say 9 times out of 10, people always side with – they always side against management. They always side – you know, normally everybody has always sided with Thibodeau. this is the first year that everybody's like, what the hell are you doing, man? Why is Kirk Heinrich playing so goddamn much? Tony Snell is showing his ability. It shouldn't take an injury to Jimmy Butler for Tony Snell to get playing time.
Yeah,
he's been showing how good he can be. There's no reason why Jimmy Butler should be playing so much. You look at that Milwaukee game where you got Rose and Butler playing the final minutes, going back into that game when the game is decided by 20 points, continuously throughout his career. How about when Derrick Rose tore his ACL, man? How about that play? Now, it was a freak accident. I'm not blaming Thibodeau for that injury, but we were up by like 25 points with 2 minutes to go in that game when he tore his ACL. And you could look at the fact that right after that Milwaukee game 2 weeks ago, it was when Derrick Rose went down with the MCL injury. The fact is, I don't see these things as coincidences.
Mark, let me jump out. First of all, let me just say one thing about the injuries going into the playoffs. Joakim Noah, 2012-2013. He starts off the season on October 31st. I'm going to read to you really quick his minutes for the first month of the year. 40, 31, 43, 40, 39, 38, 41, 42, 30. 41, 40, 41, 38, 41, 39, 44, 43. 44, 42, 44, 42, 41, 36, 40. Then he's injured. He gets player emphasized. Suddenly he's injured. There's no center. He was in the top 10 in the league as a center. There's no center in the top 10. The nature of being that large and that big is not conducive to playing 40-plus minutes a game. You don't see it. Rarely, maybe once, you'll see Dwight Howard occasionally do it in his younger years. But in general, centers do not play in today's, the modern NBA, 40-plus minutes a game. He had him doing that. He gets injured, and he goes into playoffs basically hurt, not 100%, not playing optimally, and everybody says, oh, darn it, you know, another year, bad luck for Tibbs. He's partly responsible for Noah being injured. You shouldn't be playing the center those kind of minutes. It's insanity. And for people to say there's no correlation, there is a freaking correlation. Does anybody out there honestly believe that if he had Tim Duncan on his hands, Tim Duncan would have been as healthy as he's been for the last 4 years? Hell no. Tim Duncan would be playing 38, 39, 40 minutes a game. He wouldn't be getting nights off like he currently does. It's like bizarro world here. It's like I just can't believe, like, people I respect and totally love and understand as Bulls fans don't think this is an issue. It's just not an issue. And I'm just telling you, you know what? Guys are saying it's an issue. I saw a really interesting thing the other day. And one other point before we get back to this. Another thing, too, I've been hearing a lot, well, Tibbs gets the most out of his players. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. Maybe he gets the most out of defensive players. He gets Noah to be a defensive player of the year, although I thought Noah was pretty good defensively his entire career. That said, you know, yes, he improves guys defensively. Kyle Korver, the year before he showed up in a Bulls uniform, shot 53% from three. He shows up in a Bulls uniform, he shoots 41 and 43%. Both still excellent percentages from three, but, you know, not 53%. He leaves town, and now he's shot 45, 47, and 50% from three. Mm-hmm. See any tendency here? Maybe it had something to do that he sat behind a bum like Keith Bogans for the entire first quarter. Doesn't see the floor at a quarter two. Do you think that's good or bad for your three-point percentage? You think it's good
if
to
Kyle
sit for an entire quarter?
If we had this Kyle Korver now, could we have won the finals maybe during Derrick Rose's MVP year? We had no outside shooting, and he never – and the fact was, is if you remember, Fred, it was during that series against Miami that all of a sudden he starts playing Korver, and all of a sudden Korver gets to play all the time. And it's like, well, you have not created a rhythm for this guy all year. You have not – put him in these positions so that he'll be comfortable playing like this. I mean, it's always like, well, you got to be ready to play. You got to be ready to play. Well, the Tom Thibodeau system is pretty much, we're going to run you into the ground until you get injured. Well, the next guy better be ready to play. Hey, Tony Snell, now that Jimmy Butler's not playing, you better be ready to play. Hey, Kirk Heinrich, you better be ready to play because Derrick Rose isn't playing right now. You too, Aaron Brooks. The fact is, we have depth on this team, and we haven't even used it. Nikolai Mirotic, who scored 29 freaking points against the Los Angeles Clippers, could not see the floor up until very, very recently, and it's clearly because of Taj Gibson being out that he's seeing the floor. Every player that has flourished under Tom Thibodeau that wasn't a starter when he got here or wasn't a starter, you know, established starter on day one, The only reason that they flourish is because somebody got injured.
Well, hold on. That's a great point. Here's another guy I want to point to. I agree that he helps defensive players get better. How about Marco Bellinelli? Marco Bellinelli shot 37% the year before he came to Chicago. He shot a career low 35% in Chicago. He shot 43% the next year from three when he went to San Antonio in the three-point contest. Shot 41% from New Orleans. His career low as a three-point shooter is in Chicago. I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that the way Tibbs utilized them, you know, sitting them out for an entire quarter, not bringing them to the middle of the second quarter. When you want to say that he gets the most out of his players, he only gets the most out of a certain number of his players. And the thing that really bothers me the most out of all this is this nonsense of Snow will play, you know, if he plays well. If he doesn't play well, he's going to sit. Well, why don't you once put that same argument with Thibodeau, with Heinrich? That's the exact argument you should have. Rookies are going to make mistakes. Opposite argument you should have. Rookies are going to make mistakes. You can't expect them to be perfect out there. They're going to make a ton of mistakes. So every time they make a mistake, you're going to pull them and sit them down? Do you really think that's going to help them and progress as a player? So basically, it took Snell injury to even see the floor, to Heinrich to see the floor. Then he plays out of his mind in February, and suddenly, if he doesn't play well again, every player has a bad game. He has one bad game, he's going to see the bench again? It's incredible. It's absolute nonsense. Heinrich has one of the worst Januaries ever. I saw a stat today from Kelly Scalata from Bleacher Report that he's got the lowest PER in the history of the planet for a player. There's only two other players that have a lower PER than he currently has who have played these many minutes. Yet he still plays. Doesn't matter how many mistakes, how many shots he misses, he still plays. It's
unbelievable.
It really is.
As good of a coach as Tom Thibodeau is a good coach, great coach, but at the end of the day, he is a victim to his own self. So I want to ask you this, Fred. I'm going to ask you this. First of all, right now, mano a mano duel, you get to choose. At the end of the season, one thing has to go. Management or Tom Thibodeau? Who goes?
Oh, Tom Thibodeau would go, and I'd side with management. I firmly believe in Pax and Gar. They sold me. With all the draft picks they've made, with the acquisition of Gasol, this free agent acquisition was arguably one of the best in Bulls history. I'm completely on their side in this argument. Thibodeau, if he can't get a hold of this issue and we still lose out and flame out in the playoffs, to me that's all that matters. That's all that matters. How do you do in the playoffs? That you want a team healthy and ready for the playoffs, and he's proven time and again he can't do that. I even point to his most successful year, Derrick Rose's MVP year. He had stinking Rose in the game against Atlanta, and he suffered an ankle injury in that game against Atlanta series, the second playoff series, when they were down by 10 with like seconds left. I can't remember what game it is. You don't think that affected Derrick's play for the remainder of that series and the Miami series?
Fred? In the Nick Friedell interview, I thought a great point that, you know, we as fans don't even see is the fact that he will do full practices before the game on game day, something that no other coaches do. He also does, you know, the players are beginning, and this is from Nick Friedell, and I will say this, I've been listening especially since Derrick Rose has been cleared that he will be back this year, I've been listening to a lot more ESPN 1000. I think Nick Friedell really, I mean, it's really just the Chicago Sun-Times where it's like just awful reporting. Nick Friedell really, he's there, he gives a good, honest opinion each day, the guy's a professional. I think he's certainly gotten better too as time has gone on. But he's saying the players see the fact that around the league, other players don't have to get ridden as hard as they do. And they're starting to show some sort, not that they're like fighting it, but that they're certainly
not
an
happy.
Acknowledgement.
Mark, you bring up a great point, and I tied this. I made this tie-in. I listened to both these interviews. I heard an interview with Mike Dunleavy talking about the Sunday game against the Clippers. And it was a question. It was on the Bulls.com, and he was saying how great it was to play on Sunday. And one of the reasons he gave was, quote-unquote, or something to the effect of, we don't have a shoot-around. So that's fantastic for me. You know, it's basically saying he's glad they didn't have a shoot-around. And right away, immediately after
but
that,
the shoot-arounds aren't shoot-arounds.
That's right. And you hear the Friedell interview saying that, you know, basically the team practices. They don't have a shoot-around. They have practice on game day. And right there, I made the connection. There you go. They're not happy. There's player discord. They don't like the shoot-arounds. you will never find another player in the league say something like that. The shoot around is supposed to be just show up and get your shots up. It's not a full practice like, you know, Tibbs is apparently having. So it's almost, I feel bad like bashing on the guy like this, because I am not, I agree with you, and I think we both concur, he's a great coach. But this is a serious issue. And for guys to say, I love some of the other podcasts. I've heard a couple of your podcasts saying, you know, minutes is like 1/20th or like 1/10th of what matters. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like, who plays and who doesn't is one of the only major things that a coach decides. It's huge. It's huge. I understand that's what we see. There's all this other stuff they do in the background, preparation, practices. Those are all important. No denying that. But who plays and who doesn't is extremely important. If you can't figure that out and you can't get that down, then you're going to have some serious issues in the long run. I don't know. I got to run here. I'm getting late. We got about 2 minutes.
The last point that I just want to make is that, so bringing that question that I gave to you back to me, I'm absolutely siding with management here. Since the minute that John Paxson came in here as GM, you got to look at the fact that every year, the cards that we've been dealt, we have always made generally the right choice. And you could criticize the fact that we traded Tyrus Thomas for LaMarcus Aldridge. Fine. Every GM has made 1,000 bad moves because they're not mind reader. They're not, you know, telepathic. They don't know. They can't read the future. No, they don't know exactly what's going
to
happen.
GM who's been around 10 years, you can point to one horrible move. There's nobody who's perfect.
It's not at least 1,000 probably. And you look at John Paxson, it's like, man, especially looking at the fact that he's had to draft very late, especially recently, every single player almost has come out with something to show. Even James Johnson is starting in Toronto. I mean, every single player has come out with something to show. And that LaMarcus Aldridge draft, LaMarcus Aldridge is a great player. But besides that, the draft was terrible. So it's like, I mean, whatever, he took a chance, it was terrible. But the number one pick was Andrea Bargnani. You don't hear, yeah, we traded for LaMarcus Aldridge for Tyrus Thomas. But also, we didn't have the number one pick. Why don't we go look at Toronto who drafted Andrea Bargnani? That's another team that did not expect that LaMarcus Aldridge was going to be the player that he was. So, I mean, and that year, you don't hear people berating their GM. People give our GM a terrible rap because these guys care a lot. You had an issue with Vinny Del Negro, I remember that, but that was also, it was a minutes issue. It was, hey, dude, he's been having issues with his ankle, with his feet. Joakim Noah has had reoccurring issues, and yet we ride this guy into the ground and look at him this year. He's a shell of what he's been in the past, and he's still playing a lot
of minutes. The issue that Paxson had with Vinny Del Negro was in defense of Joakim Noah. Vinny Del Negro was more concerned about his career than Joakim Noah's career, and I completely understand why Paxson was outraged by that. Did he handle it in the best way? Probably not. But I completely understand why he was outraged. So,
I have no problem with him strangling Vinny Del Negro. I feel like that's the best way to handle it.
Yeah, everybody's going to go, well, what about Teague? Yeah, he can point to bad pickups, right? Every organization has them.
Pick in the first round. How about Butler, who's also the last pick in the first round?
For most of these guys, for most of these drafts, their batting average has been extremely high when you factor in whether they've been picking. You want to compare them to Milwaukee or any of these other organizations? Every organization fires coaches for the most part and has issues. I think the Bulls have, in general, done a great job, especially in the last 5 years. Look at all the guards they picked up off the scrap heap that have been great. And I know everybody's going to say, well, Tibbs made that. No, he didn't. Tibbs had nothing freaking to do with Nate Robinson saving us against the Nets, scoring all those points. What did Tibbs teach Nate Robinson that allowed him to score all those points against the Nets to save our ass in that series? He did nothing about it. He just said, go do it. Go do it, Nate. Save us. I mean, come on. It's such a joke how much credit he gets. I've been arguing about this, too. The players deserve the credit. Butler this summer became a superstar where? In Texas. He didn't spend one freaking minute with Tibbs this summer. He worked his ass off and became a superstar this summer. I'm not saying Tibbs hasn't been a great coach to him. He's definitely helped him become better. But give the credit where the credit's due. 95% of it goes to the player. 5% goes to the coach. Come on.
God bless it, Fred.
I'm
excited that you're on board. I know that I'm on board, and I'm excited that the Chicago media is on board. Hopefully nobody's that surprised this offseason or that upset when Tom Thibodeau is canned. The management's going to have to take
it. I don't want to say that. I don't want him to be canned. I hope he gets his head out of his ass and starts starts resting guys, and I'm hoping he does that. I really do. I really think he's a great coach. I don't want this to happen. I'm not going to celebrate it if he gets fired. I don't think it's a good thing. I think he's a great coach. But I've never seen a guy this smart. Like I always say, he's like a hot blonde with a horrible breath who breaks down and cries every time I try to bring up that her breath stinks. Please
get
some mouthwash.
All you got to do is brush your teeth.
All you got to do is brush your teeth and get some scope, and the problem's solved. Instead, we got
to
deal like, you know.
He will not listen to management. That's a major problem. The fact that management can have no input since the first year that he has coached, the fact that management can't even tell him, hey, why are you playing our guys 45 minutes against the Charlotte Bobcats the last game of the season, that's a problem.
I couldn't agree more. And for those of you who disagree, email me at ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com or send in a message to me at Twitter, @CBEFred, and tell me why it was a good idea to play Jimmy Butler 48 minutes in the last regular season game of last year and Jakeem Noah with a bum knee. Why was it a good idea to play him 40-plus minutes? What did he learn in that Charlotte loss? That's what I want to know. And while you're writing this embarrassing email trying to justify those actions, ask yourself, what's wrong with myself? Because there is no justification for it. It's inexcusable. And I'm glad management's imposing it. All right, man, I got to run, brother.
All right, until next time, Vinny Bulls.
Any basketball.
All right,
take it easy, man.